Hey, Deep Fried fans. What better way to have lunch than with the classic fried Monte Cristo? It's a combination ham and cheese sandwich and French toast. Best served with fruit preserves, powdered sugar, maple syrup, or sweet mustard sauce. It's a great lunchtime treat. This is Ellie Mae here to announce show number 38, and this is part two of the Workflow Foundation conversation that Keith and Woody had with Brian Noyes. Brian is Chief Architect at iDesign, Microsoft Regional Director for the Mid-Atlantic region, and a Connected Systems MVP. He is a frequent top-rated speaker at conferences worldwide, including Microsoft TechEd, Dev Connections, DevTeach, VS Live, and others. He is the author of Developing Applications with Windows Workflow Foundation, Smart Client Deployment with Click Once, and Data Binding with Windows Forms 2.0. Okay, Deep Fried fans, grab that glass of sweet tea and get ready for some Gumpology.
Hey, Brian, what about any performance war stories with Workflow? Do you have any that you could throw at us?
Not so much war stories as just sort of like design guidance that I frequently have to give. Here's one example. I had a customer that came to me, and they were in the realm of medical image processing. And they came to me and said, you know, we're thinking about this workflow technology, and it looks like it could be a perfect fit for us because one of our biggest problems is we have these hideously complex algorithms that, you know, we'll have maybe 50 to 100 discrete computations that we do on the image to come up with an end result. And depending on the type of image processing we're doing, we sort of mix and match these different algorithmic steps, in different recipes, basically, to come up with the end result. And the management of all those discrete steps and how we tie them together and, you know, what the flow is and making sure we got, you know, step 57 before step 58 and so on is really hard with just doing it with functional code. And so this workflow technology looks perfect for us. And, you know, given that description, I said, yeah, because, one of the things I always say is so great about workflow is the way it gives you this nice graphical depiction, explicit ordering of execution, and so on. So it overlapped nicely from that perspective. But then, you know, I pushed a little further and said, well, tell me what other issues you have with your current system. And they said, well, you know, that thing we just talked about, that's a really big deal to us. But even worse than that is end-to-end performance of the image processing. It just takes too long to do the execution. And at that point, I basically said, then forget workflow. Workflow is, you know, I mentioned earlier, it's for long-running stateful processes. It's not, especially in the current version, it's not so great on, you know, throughput of execution. So if you had a 100-step computational process, the switching time to go from, you know, step 1 through 100, assuming each of those was an activity that did some computation, the computation, once you get inside of an activity, that's just normal stack-based execution .NET. There's not really any difference there. But it's the switching time between activities that really bites you. So another, you know, example where people come up is saying, oh, well, you know, we've got this web application, and we want to manage the page flow of, you know, user clicks here, they go to page A. If they click there,
yeah,
go to...
that's a common scenario, yeah.
Well, and conceptually, the technology is perfect for it. You know, you get this nice graphical flowchart type of depiction of where you're going to go. But the performance ends up, it's not necessarily a total barrier to doing it, but it's one of these things where it says, are you willing to take, you know, an additional, let's say, just rough numbers, 10 to 100 milliseconds latency in coming up with the decision of what page to send them to next. Because you have to basically dispatch the call into workflow. If it's persisted, it has to be loaded up, has to get passed in, you have to step through some activities, and each activity you step through has some overhead. And so all that compared to just executing a few lines of code is really going to be a big difference.
They'd be better performant and also be able to customize it by just throwing their pages into a table and coming up as an order ID and then just pulling that out and going to next.
Exactly. It's harder to manage. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't walk up to that table and have an easy picture of what the flow is. But from a raw, you know, throughput execution time perspective, it's probably going to be better with that latter approach you said.
You know, but I can drag a, I can build a data grid and drag and drop and update that, that, you know, workflow as well, sort of, you know, putting in that table too. So, I mean, it's, it, you kind of got to pick your battles with
exactly.
it.
Exactly. You know? But, you know, that all being said, I do want to really highlight that that story changes quite a bit with 4.0. Right now, based on their testing and measurements, they're saying that the new workflow 4.0 runtime is getting 10 to 100 times faster execution than the workflow 3.5.1. Which
wow,
is pretty
great.
Substantial.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the questions that always comes up is, well, why are they changing so much? You know, why are they changing everything about workflow? Why couldn't they just sort of refactor their way from what they have and not change everything out from under us with a whole new runtime engine? And usually my answer to that is that performance aspect. You know, look at your own code base and ask yourself, could you refactor your way into 10 to 100 times performance increase? Probably not in most cases. You pretty much need to re-architect to get that big of a change in performance time.
It's true. It's true. Well, you know, you're sort of pushing us to .NET 4.0, so let's just go ahead and jump in. So what are the big features coming in .NET 4.0?
Okay. Many. Let's see. Like I said, you know, one of the foundational ones is there's a new runtime under the covers that gives us these performance increases. There is a new, more declarative approach to creating your workflows. So in workflow 3.0 and 3.5, you could create workflows as XAML, basically XAML with an O, but you still had this code behind model to it where there was a, you know, it was more like a web form where you had a code behind, and for a lot of activities to hook them up, you would have to drop in the code behind and write some procedural code to you know, set some things up that you would then data bind to from the declarative part of it. In workflow 4.0, the primary model, even though they still support some aspects of that, when you declare a workflow, it's just pure XAML. So it's all just XML markup, declarative properties, and so on. And you basically don't have to drop to code behind except for special circumstances. Basically, if you need to drop to code behind, you really need to have a custom activity that does the code behind it in its execute method. Other things I already mentioned, you know, a whole new library basically of activities that come along with it, more functional activities than what we currently have. Some changes to existing activities. So, you know, another core feature set of workflow is the rules engine. In workflow 3.0 and 3.5, it's fairly functional, but it's fairly obscure to use. It's not very testable. It's not very usable outside of a workflow itself, even though there's kind of advanced tricks to be able to do that. It gets much easier in workflow 4.0. Let's see, other big changes besides the declarative model of the workflows. One of the things that supports that, and that means you don't have to drop the code behind as much, is that there's now what are called variables and arguments. So the way you move data around within the workflow is also more declarative, where you can declare variables and those variables have scope just like they do in your code. You can think of it as, you know, curly braces in your code denoting scope that a variable can flow or be accessed. You have the same kind of model for declaring variables within workflows in 4.0. And then you have arguments in workflow 3.5 right now to get data into an activity and back out of an activity. You pretty much have to use data binding, and you generally have to data bind to properties you expose at a workflow level. With 4.0, the activity model lets you declare arguments on a activity, and it's much more like just calling a method and passing parameters. So you can bind those to variables that are in scope or things, arguments and that come off of other activities. So it's not totally different if you've been exposed to workflow 3.5. There's still the same similar aspects of data binding and sort of pushing data around at a workflow level. It's just not all driven from the code behind. It's driven from these declarative variables and arguments.
Yeah, but that's much nicer,
definitely.
Though. Really.
It's a lot
nicer.
Oh,
it is.
Much
it
nicer.
Is very.
Let's see. What are some other big things? So the declarative model, the runtime, the rules engine, the WCF integration gets a bit better. In 3.5, they added the send and receive activities that let us make, you know, first-class WCF calls into and out of a workflow. And that works pretty good. That's what my talk at TechEd was about last week. With workflow 4.0, there were a few limitations it was easy to butt up against, though. In in 3.5. And, you know, one of them that you can definitely run into is that they maybe encapsulated a little too much. Because they're just activities in the workflow diagram, you don't really have direct access to the WCF bits through the messaging. That's sort of handled all outside in the framework. And so for, you know, certain advanced scenarios and stuff, you would have to do things that in principle you shouldn't have to do in WCF, such as cruft up message headers and things like that on your own, instead of just doing things like, you know, exposing properties or calling methods on a proxy. So that gets a little better. There's a new set of activities in workflow 4.0. They also break up the messaging model, so they make it a little more explicit if you want to do one-way messaging. So there's separate send message and receive message activities that are one-way, and then they have separate activities that are request reply style. Another one is a little more subtle, but I mentioned earlier that with 3.5, the execution model of workflows is single-threaded, basically, and that at any one point in time, you're only running a single thread through a workflow. Even though we have things in workflow today, like the parallel activity that gives you sort of the appearance and concept of concurrent execution, but it's not truly concurrent execution in the current 3.5 bits. In 4.0, they go to a truly parallel model where they're actually going to spin up multiple threads themselves and do things truly concurrently. And that also means that, you know, that rule I said before about in your custom activities, you shouldn't be doing that stuff. Now there's basically hooks in the framework to make it, I wouldn't say easy, because we are talking multi-threading and synchronization locks and things like that you have to worry about, but much more practical to do asynchronous work in your activities in workflow 4.0.
Hey, Brian, I have a question for you. So I do a lot of database development and data access. Can you kick off workflow or interact with workflow directly from a SQL server?
Sort of. One thing that jumps to mind would be, you know, if you treat a workflow as a service through those activities I just mentioned, you know, it's just a service out there. And with the ability to write managed code in the database since 2005, you could have a chunk of managed code in a function or stored proc that just makes a service call as a client. And through the service activities and workflows, you can initiate a workflow where the first activity in the workflow is basically a receive activity in the current bits or receive message in 4.0, and that can initiate the workflow. So you could potentially kick it off from a stored proc or something. I'd be a little cautious about doing that. That sounds like business logic in the database to me, which I try to avoid. But definitely possible with the technology.
I just thought that maybe if I could kick off something in the database, if I had a log or something, but I guess I could do that up at the up in the middle tier also.
Yeah, the main scenario would be, you know, I've had a few customers who are heavily invested in, you know, existing stored procedures and stuff that are probably heavier weight than most people would write these days. And they've got things like using the SQL job manager to kick off jobs and do scheduled jobs. You might use that. I could see a scenario of using the SQL scheduler, schedule agent to kick off a job that initiates a workflow or something. Again, my first instinct would be to write a lightweight Windows service that just has a timer in it that does the same thing. Because ultimately, it's just acting like a service client to just make a service call and say, do something, you know, here's some parameters.
Based on .NET 3.5 and .NET 4.0, is there anything missing in .NET 4.0? Or everything that's in .NET 3.5, we get in .NET 4.0, but it's better?
If only that were true. The one big thing that's missing that I think is going to cause... It's definitely going to cause the most pain for people who did adopt 3.5 is that the state machine workflow goes away. Now we have a whole new workflow type. That's one of the other big features I didn't mention. We have a whole new workflow type called a flowchart workflow. One of the limitations in 3.5 today is that I would say a broad spectrum of problems that you would think of throwing workflow at, you would want to think about as a sequential workflow, which is one of the workflow types available today and in 4.0. But sequential workflow has this one limitation that you can basically only go forward within the workflow. So, you know, the common scenario is like a wizard. If you were going to do that page flow example that we described before, and you said, well, I want to, you know, put together a wizard and I want to describe what the navigation through the wizard is with a sequential workflow. Works great up until the point where you put that back button in the wizard, because you can't really go back to a previous activity in a sequential workflow, other than sort of one hacky way is that you can put a while loop, and a while loop gives the appearance of revisiting a previous activity. In reality, under the covers, it spawns up a whole new clone of the activity chain, but from an execution model, it looks like you're going back. But what you end up with is all these, you know, if you think about a 10-step wizard, in order to have back buttons on every one of those steps, you pretty much have to have 10 nested while loops, you know, to have the backwards navigation in a sequential workflow. So with the current bits, what that usually drives, you know, probably 80% of the workflows out there into being a state machine, because a state machine is more freeform, event-driven. You can transition from any given state to another state based on events. And so it makes it easier to have sort of a directed graph navigation style within the workflow. Even though, if that's all you're making it a state machine for, you're not really describing things the way it's most natural. So in 4.0, we get this thing, flowchart workflow, that is more of a true directed graph. And you basically, you put your activities on a designer surface, and then you say, I go from this one to this one, and this one to this one, and from this one back to this one. You can, you know, go pretty much from any activity to any other activity in whatever order you want. But you don't have this sort of disconnect thing that you have in the state machine workflow, where when you're sitting in a state, nothing's really happening until an event occurs. But so, you know, people who have adopted 3.5 have sort of been forced into learning the state machine way of doing things for these back navigation type scenarios, or, you know, not just page flow type scenarios, but think of a business rules or business logic that says, we do this, then this, then this, but if at this validation step, we find that, you know, they have an invalid customer ID, we want to go back and regenerate a new one. And so you often have these sort of back navigation, even within your logic that a workflow might be executing. All that, again, is very easy to implement with the flowchart workflows in 4.0. But if you're used to thinking of things in terms of state machines, now you have to, you know, kind of rethink things. And it also does mean that your existing state machine workflows will have to stay on the 3.5 stack, which will still be there in 4.0, but you can't like move those 4.0 state machines slowly over to 4.0. It'll be a complete rewrite of the workflow to a flowchart is probably the closest mapping if you were going to migrate that to the 4.0 stack.
Okay, Brian. Well, we got some questions out from the Twitterverse, as I like to call it. I tweeted earlier that we were going to be interviewing you and said anybody had any workflow questions, send them in. So here we go. We got three questions from three Twitterers. The first one came in from James Eggers, and he says, there seems to be a stigma against using workflow in an ASP.NET application. Where can some devs use workflow in such applications effectively?
Part of the stigma is because workflow, I mentioned earlier that when it executes, it uses threads from the .NET thread pool. That happens to be the same thread pool that ASP.NET uses to answer requests. And so from a responsiveness perspective, if you've got a bunch of workflows that are real busy in the background, you could potentially starve the thread pool and have your ASP.NET app become non-responsive, or at least less responsive than you'd like it. So generally for ASP.NET applications, it doesn't mean you can't use workflow. It just means you got to architect things a little differently. And that would be another one of these scenarios where I would just say, treat your workflow as a service, put it in a different process so it can have its own thread pool, and just call it as a web service the same way you would for other web services. From your ASP.NET app.
Host it with WCF, which is baked in, and then call a service. Yep. I love the answer. That's good.
So here's one from Jim Holmes. He asks why side effect programming is considered a good thing in workflow, but it's not a good thing pretty much everywhere else in software development.
To a certain degree, I'm not 100% sure. I haven't read that article, but I think I know what he's talking about there is that, you know, in the current workflow model with 3.5, part of the problem I mentioned before is that you constantly have to sort of push state into the workflow itself, and it sort of feels like global variables all over again, where you keep pushing state into the workflow, and then the shared state is available to subsequent activities to data bind to, And so you do a lot of kind of moving state in and out of the activities within a workflow to workflow scope. And so the, you know, the side effects you could, maybe he's talking about there is this fact that you've got this state lingering out there that could affect the execution of later activities, even though you may not intend it to. And I think, I don't know that I'd call that a good thing. I would call that a limitation of the current workflow technology. And it's something that the variables and arguments I described earlier help to address to a large degree within workflow 4.0.
Our last Twitter question came in from Byte Master, who's down in Florida, who I got to meet back a few weeks ago. And he says, what are some strategies for assembling and configuring a workflow at runtime?
Well, there's a couple of capabilities of the framework. One is called dynamic update, which is usually meant for making changes to a deployed workflow. So when you keep in mind that, you know, the primary scenarios where workflows make a lot of sense is these long-running things, you know, things that might take days, weeks, or months to execute. And particularly in industries, you know, if you actually have a workflow out there that's going to run for months, some new piece of regulation could get passed that says, you know, at this step in your process, you have to collect a social security number to do a credit check, and that may not have existed before. But if you've got, you know, a couple hundred running workflows out there, you don't necessarily want to have to figure out how to interrupt them all, start them over, try to get to the right point in the workflow again with this new activity in place. And so dynamic update allows you to basically inject or basically add or remove activities from an executing workflow, where you always have to keep in mind with workflow executing doesn't necessarily mean executing on the stack. You know, bits sitting in a database can be an executing workflow. Could be a persisted workflow that's just waiting for an event to occur. So dynamic update is one thing that will let you, you could just, you know, start from scratch. Basically, you could have an empty workflow and use dynamic update to add activities and set the thing running. Even basically add an activity, start running, and then add, you know, more activities that follow it while it's actually running. I'm not sure that is a good way to do it. You should really limit dynamic update to those places where you have to do it and you can't afford to deploy a new version of the workflow, because there's a lot of complexity associated with it. When workflows get rehydrated from the database, you have to intercept an event and figure out whether they've been modified already, and if not, do the modification to them and so on. So it's not an easy thing to do, and I would generally avoid it. You generally want to stick to statically defined workflow definitions and just, you know, execute instances of them. As far as configuring a workflow at runtime, I'm not sure, you know, specific things he's looking for there in terms of types of configuration. Activities can, as I mentioned before, suck in data as they are executed through data bindings, but it basically has to be data that's in scope, either at the workflow level or off of a previous activity in the workflow. In terms of configuration changes outside of the workflow, there's not a whole lot built in for that. You would pretty much have to have custom activities that go out and read in data from a database or config file or something like that to dynamically change based on configuration.
Okay, thanks, Brian. Well, James, Jim, and Byte Master, hope you guys like those answers. Sometimes we do that, folks. We'll send out a announcement on Twitter, so be sure to follow C. Woodruff and Keith Elder as well as Deep Fried Byte. Sometimes we put questions out there, and if you're following us, then you can jump in and throw some questions at us. So thanks, thanks, Brian, for answering those guys' stuff.
And then usually we always record on Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday night. So follow us, especially those nights.
Yeah, keep your eyes peeled out there. All right, Brian, so let's get in. Let's go ahead and get down to the end of the show here. Let's talk about workflow services. What's going on with them, and what do you think about
it? Like I mentioned before with 3.5, I would say that's one of the best ways to use workflow currently, is to just treat it as a service. One of the, you know, rough edges, or I forget what you guys called them, rusty washers. One of the rusty washers I didn't mention earlier is the communications model of workflow before they got the service activities in there. It was fairly heinous. There's like, you know, I forget exactly how many. I usually say something like 27 steps or something. But, you know, just to make what amounts to a simple method call into the workflow from the host is horribly complicated. And so getting data into and out of the workflow, you don't want to be real chatty with it. So the best way is to implement the workflow in a way that it is a you know, full encapsulation of a business process with perhaps a couple of discrete points of input or output. And the best way to do those inputs and outputs is as service calls, because it forces you down the path. You know, if you think about things as services, you're already supposed to be following the tenets of service orientation and keeping services autonomous and making the service boundary explicit and all those kinds of things. So it forces you to, you know, do that full encapsulation of the fact that this happens to be a workflow, but to the outside world, it's just a service, or it's calling a service. So using the send and receive activities is not real hard. You know, I give several talks on this, and you can easily cover it in an hour if you have some basic fundamentals of workflow and WCF under your belt. And it's not real hard to get hooked up and make those service calls. Workflow 4.0, like I mentioned, gets a little better, more flexibility, a couple different activities that give you a little more direct access to the WCF that's under the covers for advanced scenarios. So I think, you know, even current bits, it's one of the best parts of workflow, is the ability to call it as a service or call out to services. But it gets even better in 4.0.
Reading up on workflow, I saw an interesting topic where someone was using workflow for not for workflow itself, but for just using the rules engine in .NET development. I mean, what's your take on that?
Depends on if you're, again, you know, big world split between 3.5 and 4.0. In 3.5, it was certainly possible. It was not at all intuitive, and you had to do a lot of work to sort of get things accessible outside of a workflow itself. For example, the APIs, the execution model and stuff supported the idea of storing the rules outside of the workflow. But, you know, many developers just do what they can figure out how to do through Visual Studio directly. And in Visual Studio, when you use the rules engine in 3.5, you use this thing called a policy activity. And when you declare your rules, they become basically some XML markup that gets put into a resource file as part of the project, and it's directly tied into the workflow. So it's not at all clear how you get rule definitions put outside of a single workflow, let alone used outside of the workflow execution. There's ways to do it. There's some CodePlex examples. There's some articles people have written. But again, it's not clean at all. 4.0 gets a whole lot better, partly because one of those other big changes in 4.0 is the activity execution model. In 3.5, even though we have this execute method we talked about before, there's sort of this separate infrastructure of how data gets into and out of the workflow. Because of the arguments in workflow 4.0 that we talked about, now the execute method becomes a lot more like what you might picture an execute method. It takes in its arguments and it executes. And so that means activities in 4.0, you could just call them from, you know, your business logic if you want, not even have a workflow. You could just use it as an encapsulated chunk of code that can be integrated into a workflow, but can also just be treated as a component, basically. And as a result of that, the rule set activity, if it's still called that, off the top of my head, they might have renamed it. But the I think it's rule set in 4.0 is just an activity that you can call from any chunk of .NET code, basically, and execute the rules that sit underneath it. And externalizing those rules in 4.0 also becomes a lot easier and cleaner. So, you know, in 3.5, it can be done, but it's not I wouldn't say it's a good enough rules engine, and the effort you have to go through to do that is probably not worth it. You know, if you have lots of rules-based execution, you might be better off going out and buying a third-party rules engine, which can be pretty pricey. Those are the kinds of products that are, you know, usually five figures with lots of runtime licenses and stuff you have to buy. So it's a big proposition to do that. In 4.0, I haven't done a ton of work with it yet, but it have at least looked at the architecture and what some of the code samples look like. It looks much more feasible to just use the rules engine of workflow as a rules engine, whether you use workflow or not.
Okay. So that's good to know that maybe people can hold off until 4.0 comes out.
You know, Brian, we're actually using the workflow rules engine outside of workflow completely in our work, in our company. Yeah, a while back there was, I posted this blog article a while back about how to execute rules outside of the workflow engine. And one of our architects at the company, I pointed him in that way because he was evaluating third-party tools. And we couldn't really find anything that was really good. And so he just decided to, you know, build one using the rules engine in .NET. And so so they did. He and a couple other people on the team built one. And they built a whole entire interface. It's a smart cloud application, click once deployed. You drag and you drop things over. You can type in custom rules. It is really, really slick. Now, with that said, it took them a long time to build it, right? I mean, it was a lot of work that they built, but we have thousands of rules because we run loan calculations, and so when we need to run a particular fee calculation or something, we call out to a service, and it invokes the rules engine on that object that was passed through, and then returns a calculation or a value or something. And it's doing really, really well. Their main thing they're doing is that because we have so many rules is caching is a problem, you know?
Sure.
Because the rule sets are so large. So we're investigating, using Velocity, which is a new caching engine that's going to be part of the Windows, platform that you'll get for free out of the box. And so we're investigating using that and doing some things with them. But it, you know, it took a while, but you can do it. There's also a product out there. We don't really want to mention any vendors too much, but not to, you know, get anybody some free press. But
yep,
there is a company out there called InRule that uses workflow and does a pretty good job, and a lot of people are using that. So if you're looking for something built on top of the .NET rules engine, go check out InRule and check out some of their demos.
Exactly. That's one that I specifically looked at for a customer, and I liked what I saw. But like I said, it's not cheap. You know, you get what you pay for, though. It's more one of those fully featured products ready to go and plug into an application. But you got to pay for that.
Yeah. I mean, it's money, but, you know, somebody had to spend time to do it. So you get what you pay for, as you said. Talk about testing workflows, Ryan.
That is definitely one of those arenas. You know, I didn't used to be really into TDD just because I hadn't had the opportunity to really experience and exercise it. I had the pleasure of working as basically a vendor for Microsoft on the Prism project, the composite application guidance for WPF and Silverlight, at the beginning of 2008. Mm-hmm. And they practiced pure agile in patterns of practices there. And so we were doing, you know, true test-driven development, test first and all that, and sort of learned the patterns and the cadence of doing that, and really got to like it. When you approach Windows workflow, you know, you're sort of coming at the problem from the opposite end. Instead of, you know, thinking of things in terms of writing a test first or even being able to unit test discrete parts, you're stepping into it, you know, this different philosophy I talked about up front is that you're starting with the big picture. And it's hard to visualize unit tests when you're looking at this big picture overall flow of your application. With 3.5, the testability, it's kind of a mixed story. You can definitely, because there's that execution model of the activities, for custom activities, you can definitely write those and unit test them. But for any logic you put in the workflow itself, unless they're just sort of stateless functions that you pass data into and pull data out of, in which case they don't belong in the workflow in the first place, it's kind of hard to unit test that stuff in 3.5. With 4.0, because things go to a much more declarative model at the workflow level and all the execution logic resides in the activities, and then we have this more explicit argument model for the activity execution, it's a much better story for writing unit tests against your workflow definitions. Because you don't really write them so much at the workflow level, even though workflows themselves are also just activities that you can execute. So you can, you know, write unit tests that execute the whole workflow. You can write unit tests that execute individual activities. And the programming model is much closer to what you'd expect for just normal functional code behind the scenes.
What about doing stuff with like ILC containers and stuff like that?
That's a great question. You know, this one comes up a lot with WCF because I do a lot of work there. And you know, it's another one of those places where it's not really clear what to do, because normally WCF's in charge of constructing your objects, and the same is definitely true for workflow. In WCF, there's actually a pretty clean, you know, WCF is nothing if not extensible, And so there are very clean extensibility hooks in WCF to hook in an IOC container, and there's some good blog posts out there of how to do it. I have not looked into trying to introduce an IOC container into workflow, so I don't know what would be involved, but based on other things I've seen, extensibility is not, you know, there's certainly some extensibility points in workflow, but I wouldn't say, at least in 3.5, that's one of its strongest points. So I wouldn't expect that to be totally straightforward. Probably in 4.0 it's better because of the execution model and the declarative nature, but that would be a fun one to dig into.
So Brian, we always ask the most important question at the very end. What is your favorite deep fried food?
Ooh, probably chicken fingers. I could eat chicken fingers for just about every meal, I think.
Oh, that's,
you know, we have
good.
A chicken finger place down here in Hattiesburg on about every corner, man. We have like Willie T's. We have Zaxby's. You ever heard of Zaxby's?
Yeah, yeah,
if you ever go,
I've
if
heard
you
ever, it.
Go buy one. Check. They got some really good chicken fingers and some really good sauce. Or sauce.
Can't go
really,
wrong with deep fried, right? Other than that messy little health aspect.
No.
Nope. Yeah, that's the only drawback.
Absolutely.
Anything in moderation is okay. You know, I mean, I don't deep fry my hamburger, but I have fried hamburgers, and you know, as long as you have one.
Got
every
a neighbor who swears by
then,
their deep fried turkeys on Thanksgiving. I have yet to try that.
Mm, oh, that you really need really to. Good. Those are really awesome.
Oh, it keeps it so moist.
You know what? There's a place in Texas called Billy's Cajun Market. And a couple years ago, I ordered Thanksgiving from them and had it shipped over the entire meal. It was a deep-fried Cajun turkey. You get all the fixings. We had crab cakes. We had crab cakes. We had crawfish etouffee. We had beans. We had casserole. We had dessert. The whole thing was like $120. Way cheaper than going out and buying all of it. So, I have if you're interested, go back to my blog and search for Cajun turkey, and then you'll find the blog article and see pictures of the meal and everything. But yeah, totally good stuff, man. Well, folks, we certainly appreciate you tuning in today to today's show. Brian, we certainly appreciate you coming on. You're just a wealth of knowledge. Hopefully, we'll be able to meet face to face one day, man.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, thanks, Brian. Maybe we'll see you at PDC this fall. I think Keith and I are going to try to make
Sounds
it out
good.
There.
That's the plan. All right. Well, folks, we certainly appreciate you tuning in. As always, you can follow us online at Twitter at twitter.com/deepfriedbite. You can also send in your questions, queries, or posers via email at comments@deepfriedbites.com. Let us know how we're doing. Go out to the website, Deep Fried Bites, comment on the shows, let the guests know how they did. Let us know as well. And until next time, folks, we'll see you. Keep those tea glasses full and those axes sharp. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
See you guys.